In a world increasingly defined by competition and self-interest, Generosity Wins offers a refreshing counter-narrative that's captivating business leaders and cultural icons alike. This groundbreaking book has become a favorite among executives at companies like Microsoft and Starbucks, with Oprah Winfrey reportedly recommending it to her inner circle. Through a compelling fictional narrative interwoven with real-life interviews, authors Monty Wood, who built and sold two marketing agencies worth over $240 million, and Dr. Nicole Roberts, a public health expert with degrees from the University of Chicago, make a persuasive case that generosity isn't just a virtue, it's a strategic advantage in both business and life. As one Fortune 500 CEO noted, "This book transformed how I approach leadership. Generosity isn't soft, it's the hardest and smartest way to succeed." Emily Gardner was blindsided. As a rising star at Pinafore Global Luxury Hotels, she'd slashed costs by 32% and boosted quarterly profits by an unprecedented 45% at the San Diego property. Her data-driven approach had earned her recognition in industry publications, and she was widely considered next in line for a regional leadership role. Yet here was her mentor and CEO, Don Jenkins, not praising her financial wizardry, but removing her from her position. "You've abandoned the Pinafore way," Don explained, his disappointment palpable. "Success isn't measured by numbers alone, but through generosity and caring." He pointed to concerning trends. Employee turnover had doubled, guest satisfaction scores were at a 5-year low, and the hotel's community engagement programs had been quietly discontinued to cut costs. Rather than firing her, Don presented Emily with a mysterious assignment. Spend 6 months traveling across America interviewing leaders who embody generosity. People who've achieved success not just financially, but holistically. These would include tech entrepreneurs, hospital administrators, restaurateurs, and nonprofit founders, all who had found ways to blend profitability with purpose. If she completed this journey successfully, a new senior position, Chief Generosity Officer, could be hers. Emily's initial skepticism, was this just a ploy to make her quit, gradually gave way to curiosity. The numbers didn't lie, but perhaps she'd been measuring the wrong things. Had she strayed from her authentic values? Don reminded her of her own previously written vision statement, penned during her management training 3 years ago, which included not just financial success, but supporting others' growth and creating lasting positive impact in people's lives. The disconnect between her stated values and recent actions was impossible to ignore. What if generosity wasn't just a nice-to-have virtue, but something more fundamental, perhaps even a superpower for personal and professional success? Research had shown that companies with strong giving cultures experienced 30% higher retention rates and 23% better productivity. As Emily packed her bags for the first stop in Seattle, she reflected on the irony. In pursuit of traditional success metrics, she'd actually been failing at the deeper measures that truly mattered. As she embarked on her cross-country journey of discovery, she would find herself transformed by the wisdom of remarkable individuals who had harnessed generosity to achieve extraordinary results, not just in their balance sheets, but in the lives they touched and the legacy they were creating. "The empty cup has little to give," explained Dr. Beth McQuiston, Senior Medical Director at Abbott, as she shared the neuroscience behind generosity with Emily. "Far from being merely a moral virtue, generosity has evolutionary roots in human survival through collaboration and pro-social behavior. This tendency has become hardwired in our brain chemistry, activating reward circuits visible in brain scans. When people share equitably, their orbital frontal cortex lights up, indicating pleasure even when fairness comes at personal cost. Generous acts trigger a neurochemical cocktail. Dopamine creates good feelings, oxytocin promotes trust and bonding, serotonin maintains mood, and endorphins produce a helper's high. Even witnessing kindness can trigger these responses," McQuiston explained, "making people more likely to volunteer or help others. In the workplace, this translates to tangible benefits. Research shows that compassionate leadership creates positive brain responses in employees, reducing exhaustion and absenteeism. Employees stay when they feel valued rather than treated transactionally. Studies found that after 14 years of research, selfish, aggressive people were less likely to advance in their careers than generous, agreeable individuals. Pro-social motivation correlates with higher incomes across all levels, McQuisted emphasized. Kindness, not toughness, leads to career success. The health benefits are equally impressive. Longer life, reduced blood pressure, decreased cardiovascular risk factors, lower stress and cortisol levels, maintained cognitive function during aging, alleviation of depression symptoms, and pain relief. For older adults, volunteering links to greater quality of life, increased self-esteem, and dramatically improved physical activity levels. Volunteers increased activity by 110% compared to just 12% for non-volunteers. Perhaps most remarkably, generosity is contagious. Research shows that a generous act can inspire generosity in someone 3 degrees removed, potentially influencing hundreds of people. This is the positive aspect of social media, McQuiston noted, making acts of kindness go viral. As Emily absorbed these insights, she realized generosity wasn't just a feel-good concept, but a scientifically validated pathway to success, health, and happiness. Generosity is any act of kindness or support given without expectation of exchange or return from recipients, Jack Pannell explained to Emily from his Columbus home. It's being nice even when you're in a bad mood, showing a new hire around when your desk is piled with work. This definition challenged Emily's preconceptions. Generosity wasn't limited to grand philanthropic gestures or financial donations. It encompassed daily interactions, mentorship, creating opportunities for others, and even how we approach leadership. Will Little, whose grandfather rose from poverty to success, emphasized that true generosity requires no expectation of return and extends beyond money to include time, kindness, and thoughtful conversation. For him, mentoring young employees provided greater satisfaction than financial success. Sherry Beckstead, who lost her husband to COVID, witnessed hospital staff embodying true generosity. Medical personnel who couldn't leave the hospital and sacrificed time with their families to care for patients. Generosity begins with the human spirit through acts of grace and kindness, she explained. Several interviewees cautioned against confusing generosity with martyrdom. Elmer Hondis defined generosity as maintaining space before defending one's integrity, but warned that exceeding personal limits isn't true generosity, as it prevents self-care. After a health scare that landed him in the hospital with high blood pressure, Jack Pannell realized he needed to slow down. I couldn't do any good in the world if I weren't alive to do it. Andre Durand offered perhaps the most unexpected definition. Generosity is believing in someone when there is no reason to believe, followed by trust where there is no reason to trust. He recalled how a wealthy man gave him $10,000 for a business idea when he was just a poor high school student, an act of belief without expectation of return that changed his trajectory. As Emily synthesized these perspectives, she began to see generosity not as sacrifice, but as a mindset, one that could transform both personal relationships and organizational cultures. A culture of generosity, where both employees and customers feel sincerely valued, promotes trust, and business thrives on trust, Andre Durand told Emily. This insight was echoed across her interviews with successful business leaders who had built thriving organizations on foundations of generosity. Mike Kaplan, CEO of Aspen Skiing Company, SkiCo, described how their approach to hospitality required what they called guided self-discovery. Unlike rigid manufacturing environments, SkiCo trained employees in values and standards but gave them autonomy to make decisions in constantly changing mountain conditions. This empowered frontline staff while ensuring they upheld brand values. When weather disruptions caused travel chaos, they prepared staff to show extra empathy to frustrated arrivals. When a lift broke down for 45 minutes, Ski Patrol handed out $50 snow coupons at the top. This approach turned potential PR disasters into opportunities to reinforce company values and build loyalty among both customers and employees. Rather than firing underperformers, SkiCo focused on finding the right role for each person. Kaplan shared the story of Tom, a frowning ticket seller who received customer complaints but thrived after being moved to a supervisory role with less direct customer contact, ultimately becoming a valued mentor over his 30-year career. Andy Hill transformed his company culture by implementing a vivid vision that included generous benefits like 4 weeks paid time off from day one, a week of paid volunteer time, and removing the dress code, all based on the belief that employees want to do their best when trusted. This approach paid off when Henrik, who had the skills to implement every aspect of their vision, joined the company the very day they announced these changes. Hill believes generosity cannot coexist with excessive control, arguing that while processes and policies are necessary, companies lose energy when they stop believing in employees' generous spirit. Christopher Graves distinguished between transactional people, who expect something in return for their generosity, and relational people, who help others for its own sake. When hiring managers, Graves tested candidates by asking them about former colleagues' current activities. Those who struggled with this question typically viewed relationships transactionally rather than maintaining genuine connections. These examples demonstrated to Emily that generosity wasn't just a personal virtue, but a viable business strategy, one that created sustainable success through trust, autonomy, and authentic relationships. Generosity isn't just something you're born with, it's something you learn, Melissa Dawn Simpkins explained to Emily. Across her interviews, Emily discovered how family experiences shape generosity in profound ways. Simpkins described her multidimensional childhood in small-town Indiana, where she and her sister were the only black children in school. Her mother taught her to see her classroom as a flower garden of diversity, explaining that God made flowers of every color, and people are similarly beautiful in different ways. Her hippie parents often opened their home to people in need, housing John Cougar Mellencamp's drummer for 6 months and taking in an abused woman and her daughter. Will Little explained how his generous spirit came from generations of family example. His grandfather, once poor but later successful, made giving back a priority after benefiting from extreme generosity himself. Little's parents continued this tradition. His father still volunteers at free clinics, while his mother's parents helped care for their employees' families. Dr. Ayman L. Mohandez described growing up in a family of physicians in Egypt. His mother, a pioneer who graduated medical school in 1941, became one of the first pediatric neurologists in the Middle East. Both parents dedicated themselves to service beyond what he considers excessive, inspiring him while demonstrating the joy that comes from giving. Glenn Frommer's Jewish upbringing in Brooklyn instilled values of tzedakah, giving without expectation, and performing daily mitzvahs, good deeds. His grandfather Henry exemplified generosity by secretly giving his father extra change when selling them groceries. Extending generosity to his own family, Frommer gathered his wife and 3 adult children to create a shared philanthropic approach. While honoring their different passions, he proposed each family member research 5 well-run charities addressing causes they cared about. Beyond financial contributions, he involved his children in hands-on service with organizations like Habitat for Humanity, ensuring they met the people who would benefit from their work. These stories reveal to Emily that generosity often begins with family modeling, but can be cultivated at any stage of life through intentional practice and community involvement. The empty cup has little to give, Andre Durand told Emily, articulating a theme that emerged consistently throughout her interviews. True generosity requires self-care, not as selfishness, but as the foundation for sustainable giving. This principle became increasingly evident as leaders across various sectors shared their personal journeys of discovering the critical balance between giving and self-renewal. After caring for her terminally ill husband at home and losing him and her beloved dogs in quick succession, Sherry Beckstedt experienced severe nerve damage behind one eye, her body's physical manifestation of emotional exhaustion. This health crisis served as a stark warning that the well was running dry. Through this challenging experience, she learned that self-care isn't selfish, but essential for long-term resilience. She immersed herself in healing practices, attending wellness retreats, and developing a daily meditation routine. Her journey led her to discover the transformative power of quiet solitude, and she established morning gratitude rituals focusing on her body's capabilities rather than its limitations. Dr. Beth McQuiston brought a scientific perspective to self-care, advocating for a comprehensive approach based on neurological research. She emphasized four key pillars: regular cardiovascular exercise to boost brain function, daily mindful meditation to reduce stress hormones, maintaining consistent sleep patterns of 7 to 9 hours, and intentional exposure to natural morning light to regulate circadian rhythms. Her innovative mental weeds technique involved actively identifying negative thought patterns and systematically replacing them with positive alternatives. For instance, when stuck in traffic, she transformed frustration into an opportunity for gratitude practice, listing things she appreciated about her life and work. Will Little, despite managing multiple charitable initiatives, maintained his capacity for generosity through rigid adherence to self-care routines. He protected his daily workout time as religiously as board meetings and carved out specific hours for quiet reflection and strategic thinking. For Mike Kaplan at SkiCo, human connection proved essential to maintaining enthusiasm and preventing burnout. He regularly stepped away from administrative duties to ski with staff and engage with customers, finding that these interactions recharged his emotional batteries and provided fresh perspectives on leadership challenges. Glenn Frommer's wake-up call came through personal tragedy when his father died prematurely at 62, having neglected his health while building a successful business. This loss inspired Frommer to prioritize his well-being, implementing a comprehensive fitness regimen and regular health screenings to ensure he could continue his philanthropic work for decades to come. Melissa Simpkins developed a structured approach to self-care, incorporating quarterly planning retreats for big-picture thinking, maintaining consistent workout routines, and scheduling mandatory rest days. She viewed her brand development work through a spiritual lens, seeing it as facilitating connections between individuals and their divine purpose, which added deeper meaning to her self-care practices. Andre Duran introduced an innovative energy management system, conceptualizing personal energy as a battery with finite and diminishing capacity over time. He developed a sophisticated calendar color coding system to predict and manage energy demands, marking high drain activities like vision sessions and board meetings in red, while scheduling rejuvenating activities in green. This system helped him maintain optimal performance while preventing energy depletion. These diverse perspectives helped Emily understand that self-care wasn't merely a luxury or selfish indulgence, but a strategic imperative, creating the necessary foundation for sustainable generosity rather than leading to burnout and resentment. The leader's experiences demonstrated that intentional self-care practices were essential for maintaining the capacity to serve others effectively over the long term. "Your okayness is assured," Andy Hill's therapist told him when he was struggling with his identity. This simple but profound insight gave Hill the courage to leave the Mormon church despite potentially losing family and friends, acknowledge his sexuality, and come out as gay. His journey to authenticity ultimately enabled greater generosity toward others. Across her interviews, Emily discovered that generosity often requires the courage to be authentically yourself, to trust your values even when they conflict with external pressures or expectations. Christopher Graves revealed his upbringing in a low-income housing project in Norfolk, Virginia, where he lived with six family members in a tiny cinderblock apartment. Though grateful for his scholarship to the prestigious Norfolk Academy, he hid where he lived from classmates, walking far from his neighborhood before boarding the school bus. His life changed when third-grade teacher Mrs. Davis and later mentor Harvard Knowles believed in him, helping him navigate the challenges of being surrounded by wealthy students. Sherry Beckstead advised spending time defining core values and guiding principles. She shared her own principles: knowing yourself, keeping promises, learning daily, addressing challenges, nurturing love, doing small kindnesses, owning your attitude, being thankful, beginning with the end in mind, and keeping God central. Dr. McQuiston emphasized authenticity, advising to run your own race rather than following others' tempos. She believes positivity and generosity ultimately pay off, providing purpose, serenity, and leaving a positive legacy. For Hill, central to his philosophy is okayness, accepting oneself as fundamentally worthy regardless of external judgment. He emphasizes that generosity means detaching from those who doubt you while trusting that there will always be someone to teach you and somebody to catch you when you fall. As Emily reflected on these stories, she realized she had actually worked out her own okayness in college, overcoming parents who made her feel inadequate. Her acceptance to Cornell and subsequent success there had proven her worth, which Dawn had recognized in her mission statement. The courage to be authentically herself would be essential to her practice of generosity. Generosity creates a multiplier effect, like an investment fund that grows exponentially as others join in, Dr. Elmohandez told Emily. This ripple effect emerged as perhaps the most powerful theme across her interviews. Sports agent Lee Steinberg pioneered helping athletes establish charitable foundations and community programs. Troy Aikman endowed UCLA scholarships. Warwick Dunn helped single parents buy homes, and Lennox Lewis campaigned against domestic violence. With kicker Rolf Benirschek, he created Kicks for Critters, which raised millions for endangered species conservation by having people pledge donations for each field goal. When Glenn Frommer was diagnosed with polycystic kidney disease, PKD, an incurable condition that eventually leads to kidney failure, he joined the PKD Foundation's Advocacy Network and Research Committee. This led to his Ride for PKD, a 5,500-mile cross-country bicycle journey with his wife Beth that raised $654,000 for PKD research, connected him with affected families nationwide, and garnered media attention and meetings with legislators. Dr. Beth McQuiston explained how generosity spreads through social networks, with research showing that a generous act can inspire generosity in someone 3 degrees removed, potentially influencing hundreds of people. Jack Pannell's Baltimore Collegiate School for Boys grew to serve 500 boys with another 500 on the waiting list. Having stepped down from Baltimore Collegiate, he's now establishing similar schools in Philadelphia and Phoenix while exploring expansion to Indianapolis, Nashville, Milwaukee, and Jacksonville. After selling his business in 2013, Glenn Frommer began writing annual thank you letters to people who impacted his life, including teachers and mentors he hadn't seen in decades, extending gratitude across time and space. As Emily completed her journey, she realized she was experiencing this ripple effect herself. Dawn's generous act of belief in her potential had set her on a path of transformation. Rather than simply gathering wisdom for a corporate training program, she had rediscovered her authentic self and reconnected with her core values. When Dawn presented Emily with her new business cards naming her Chief Generosity Officer at Pinafore Global, she understood that generosity wasn't just a strategy, but a way of being, one that would continue to ripple outward through her interactions with colleagues, customers, and everyone she encountered. As Emily left her final meeting with Dawn, she visited a Starbucks where she practiced her new approach to generosity by genuinely engaging with the barista. The simple interaction confirmed how good it felt to connect authentically with others, a small ripple that would grow with each subsequent interaction. The journey of generosity begins with a single step, one act of kindness, belief, or support given without expectation of return. Yet the science is clear. This seemingly simple act triggers a cascade of benefits, from neurochemical rewards and improved health to stronger relationships and career advancement. What makes generosity uniquely human is our capacity to give to strangers we may never know, an attribute credited with advancing our civilization's evolution. Unlike artificial intelligence, which can simulate helpfulness but cannot be truly generous, humans possess this superpower that enhances both individual well-being and collective progress. The formula is simple yet profound. Daily investment in generosity yields great returns. The superpower emerges when you benefit yourself through generosity toward others without expecting reciprocation. This isn't selfishness, it's wisdom. Whether you're leading a global organization, building a family legacy, or simply seeking greater fulfillment in life, generosity offers a pathway to success that transcends traditional metrics. It creates what the ancients called eudaimonic success, a form of happiness, contentment, or success achieved through self-actualization and meaningful purpose. As Andre Durand predicted, generosity will play an even bigger role in success as time passes. In a world increasingly defined by technological disruption and social disconnection, our uniquely human capacity for generosity may be our greatest competitive advantage and our best hope for reversing societal decline. The challenge is clear. Perform one generous act daily for 30 days. Journal the effects. Share what you've learned with others. Watch as the ripples extend outward, transforming not just your life, but the world around you. Because in the end, generosity truly wins.